I think we should have worked with what we had. Disbanding the entire Ba'ath Party, what happened was is that the Sunnis had controlled it, right? The Sunnis are a very small population in Iraq, but that was Saddam Hussein's population. So as soon as we came in there, we disbanded all those Sunnis from the government, from the military. The Shias went about and said, hey, I want retribution for the last 30 years.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. This is Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, we got a really interesting guest for you today. Somebody who's gone from Army to Mercenary to IT, and not all at once. His name is Morgan Lorette, and the book is Guns, Girls, and Greed. Morgan, hey, so on your resume, you have that you were a mercenary for Blackwater. Is that prominently featured there?
Absolutely not. No, I say I worked for the U.S. State Department. You know, Blackwater doesn't have the panache when you're trying to get a job outside of defense contracting. So,
hey, so I would think though, with your experience, so you were a contractor for Blackwater, and they paid you pretty well, didn't they?
They did. 23 years old, small-time USA kid. They paid me $550 a day, and that was so much money when I was 23. I mean, it's still so much money, don't get me wrong, but enough money to get me to go over there after they had the four Blackwater guys hanged off the bridge in Fallujah.
Yeah.
So they had to come at you pretty high salary, or else nobody was going to go over there and do that.
Hey, and that was 7 days a week for months at a time, right?
Yeah, technically we worked 7 days a week, but it really depended on what the diplomats wanted to do. So we protected diplomats, and some days you would go 3-4 times out into the red zone where, you know, the boogeyman was and the car bombs hung out. And some days you would just take the day off 2-4 days. And it was interesting because in 04, the beginning, everybody wanted to help Iraq and rebuild Iraq. And then a couple of the diplomats ended up getting killed either by rockets or like IEDs. And they decided they didn't want to go out nearly as often after that. So you kind of watched the pace of life go from holy cow to pretty mundane.
Did you know Eric Prince, founder of Blackwater?
I did not. He came over to Iraq once. It's a funny story. I put it in the book, but we had a rocket hit while he was there, and he had his own protective detail, and they like surrounded him and ran him off. And that's the last we saw of him. And everybody else, it's just a normal day in Baghdad, right? Rockets hit, mortars hit. So we all just stood there and we're like, oh, I guess that's the end of our meeting.
Yeah. So, hey, was Iraq just a repeat of like Vietnam?
Oh, 100%. It was us going in there to do one thing, and then we just kept throwing good money after bad, one thing after the other. It was, now we have to build the nation. What we did is we got rid of the Ba'ath Party. You hear about how we disbanded the military, but at the same time, it disbanded the entire government. So people that know how to pick up trash from the street, to land airplanes, like all that stuff was gone. And that's what the State Department did, is it came in and said, we're going to send in the FAA and the waste management guys to teach these guys how to run a country, but who's going to protect them? Mm-hmm. They didn't have any protection details, so they grabbed knuckle draggers like me and were like, hey, go out there and stand in front of that guy, and if a bullet comes by, jump in front of it. So that's pretty much what the job was, get a guy from point A to point B alive and get him back.
And yeah, that was, I knew we'd lost it when I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who was the military that we had installed to run Iraq, and he disbanded the army.
Oh, Bremer, yeah.
Bremer, Paul Bremer. That just seemed to be a complete act of insanity.
Yeah, looking back on it, I mean, I understand the military aspect to a certain extent, but when you're getting rid of anybody that's ever run the country, the people that knew how to pump oil, like your entire revenue stream coming in, you get rid of those guys and you say, hey, we're going to put in new people and we'll just teach them. Like those things can't be taught over the course of 2-4 weeks, months, years.
Yeah. It's like Venezuela, you know, nationalize everything, fire all the people that have been there long term that made it work, and then expect things to just work out fine. Hey, what do you think the most important thing you learned from being a mercenary was?
Well, one, the money was good. And two, I got to see it from different angles, right? From the military, all you see is what's your mission? What are you going to do today? Working for Blackwater, we got to hang out with all those agency types, and you could kind of see the wheels turning of what they wanted to do. Now, granted, they didn't get it done, but there was no coordination between the military and all these other agencies over there. And I knew somewhere in like early 2005, it just wasn't going to go well. Like, you could just hear the military talk about how great it is, and then a car bomb blows up right outside the gate. But you could hear like the diplomats going on TV, John Bolton, I met him over there, and he would go over there and say how great it was going, but it didn't match what was happening on the ground. So when you talk about Vietnam, same thing, right? Our body count was really high. We killed 10 to 1, but we weren't winning the war. And without an actual end state, right? Any project, you have a start date and an end state, and it's done. We just never had that. So as an Army officer, as a contractor, you could tell we were just fighting to fight until we finally just had to give up.
Yeah, we came. The war, every war the U.S. fights in comes with an expiration date, right?
Yeah, but without a goal.
Yeah. So, hey, the first Gulf War, the goal was to get Saddam out of Kuwait, right? And once we did that, it was over. And destroyed their capabilities, basically, but not so much that that they couldn't contain Iran. And then, you know, we go back again, and it becomes this nation-building thing. Hey, so what do you think we could have done that would have made this, besides not going to war in Iraq again, what would have made a difference here?
I think we should have worked with what we had. Disbanding the entire Ba'ath Party, what happened was is that the Sunnis had controlled it, right? The Sunnis are a very small population in Iraq, but that was Saddam Hussein's population. So as soon as we came in there, we disbanded all those Sunnis from the government, from the military. The Shias went about and said, hey, I want retribution for the last 30 years. So that's when the kill squads came in 2004. That's when you started seeing the Sunnis over in the Sunni Triangle, Ramadi, Fallujah. And we let them get to a point that they hated each other so much that they were going to fight it out. And as soon as that happened, we lost. There was no way for us to reconcile that.
So Petraeus went in there, though, and he seemed to have contained things. He paid off everybody, I guess.
And he did. He did walk around with a big briefcase full of money, and that always helps. His strategy was correct, but it wasn't able to be sustained long term. Because when you start paying these people off and you say, hey, we're going to start giving you jobs and we're going to teach you how to grow stuff, that'll placate them for a bit. But at the end of the day, they're still going to hate the Sunnis versus the Shias, the West versus the East part of Iraq, the Northern part of Iraq with the Kurds. They hate everybody.
Yeah.
It's a tinderbox. And then Petraeus gets to go and do his victory lap. This is why I wrote the book. I'm tired of hearing about how generals won this war, even though we lost it. But anyway, now he's out there talking about, you know, teaching at Columbia, and he's on all these boards and stuff about how great he did. And at the end of the day, the only thing generals have done for the last 20 years is lose wars, and we just keep patting them on the back.
Yeah, I guess they'll never learn. And, you know, there's certain countries that shouldn't be countries and that are only held together by the force of one personality, like Iraq, like Afghanistan, where it's all these sets that are killing each other and have been, you know, tribal warfare for thousands of years. And we saw it like in Yugoslavia. You had Marshal Tito. He was the only guy that could keep that country together. Once he was gone, it just split up, and maybe it's better off now. Maybe splitting up these countries was the best approach.
Yeah, I mean, Gaddafi in Lebanon, right? We took him out, and that went terribly Syria is the same thing. Assad, we have him over kind of in one area, and the rest is just absolute all tribal lands, and they're fighting each other. We come in with the paradigm of democracy and the nation being your first priority, right? You ask anybody, they're American first. Over there, you're part of a tribe, and then you're part of a sect, and then, hey, yeah, I guess I'm kind of in Iraq, so I'm an Iraqi. But their loyalty lies at that tribal level, and we're not going to change that. I don't care how many times we go out there and say, just go vote and take your blue finger out and show it in the air. It's never going to change because these people are only loyal to their tribe.
It's true. Something that as Americans, we don't understand that. But hey, maybe soon. So, well, appreciate your coming on here. Just tell me, how long did you wind up spending in Iraq?
I did 18 months in Iraq with the Blackwater, and then I did another year with the Army. And then before that, I was in Iraq during the ground offensive in 2003. So I got to kind of watch the progression of Iraq. You could tell it was getting safer, but you could also tell that they were just biding their time for us to leave. And they knew we were going to leave at some point. And then, of course, the second that we leave, ISIS goes into Mosul and starts taking that over, and we have to kind of jump right back into it. So it was an interesting progression to watch. But there's a part in the book where I talk about the toilets and the sinks in this police station. So we're trying to set up a police station so that they can move into it. And they keep stealing all the toilets and the sinks, and we can't open it and give it to them because the toilets and the sinks by contract have to be done. So we buy more toilets, we put more toilets in. The next day we go over there, they're all stolen again. And this happened over and over and over again. And it was kind of a microcosm for what Iraq was. People were going to be out for themselves. And it didn't matter what we did, how much money we gave them. They were going to get that toilet because pooping in a hole is not that fun. So that toilet was a hot commodity.
Oh, man. Yeah, you can't make this stuff up, huh?
No. People ask me how much of the book is real, and it's like, it's all real. Like, that's how outlandish it was in 2004, 2005.
Crazy. Hey, so, we should talk about mercenaries, the role they play for the United States. I remember during the Vietnam War, we had, and I think during Korea too, we had Turkish mercenaries there. We had ties, so we had hired the Thai army to fight in Vietnam. And going back to the founding of this country, the Revolutionary War, England, this is a rich heritage of mercenary warfare. England had hired the Hessians, the Germans. They were fighting here against our forefathers. So generally, mercenary wars don't work out too well.
No, they don't. The problem now is that once you get into a government contract, once you're part of that military industrial complex, the money is so good. So everybody thought that the private military companies were going to die off after Afghanistan and Iraq ended. They haven't. They've just evolved. Now they're stateside down at the U.S. border. They're over in the Ukraine. They're over in Israel. They're in Syria. And what they've been able to do is still get that funding source from the government to be able to show where they can supposedly add value. And it's not going to go away until somebody puts a microscope on it and says, who is governing these companies? And nobody is.
And like you said, when a contractor, quote unquote contractor, gets killed in some place, it's like, oh, that's too bad. Whereas if it's an American soldier who gets killed and it's in the newspaper for weeks, so the political risk by sending mercenaries out there is a lot less than sending American troops.
Well, and if something goes bad, they have somebody to blame. That's not DHS or DOD or Department of State. That's that bad contractor. And this is what we ran into in Iraq, is what laws govern you. You're a civilian over in Iraq, which is a sovereign country. You're not under the UCMJ like the military. We weren't under the Iraqi government criminal code. So what code actually, how did we get due process for something if it went bad? And you can't overseas, especially in a combat zone. So I think it's very convenient for politicians to throw contractors at a problem now than it is to say, let's go put boots on the ground, because that shows that they're actually backing it. And they would prefer just to stay in that nice little gray area and say, oh, that wasn't me. That was that bad contractor. Yeah, but who signed their contract? Who did the budget?
Yeah. Hey, they're as much a part of the U.S. government. And that's the thing. It's that they have the deniability, right? They got the ability to deny that we're at war, like the military advisors in Vietnam. That's kind of the way these things start, right? We have advisors in every hot spot in the world now, don't we?
Oh, 100%. And if you put boots on the ground, we had those three soldiers killed in Jordan that made the news for a long time. But I guarantee you that same base had a bunch of private military contractors. There was a ton of people that were also injured, but nobody heard about the injured. And I'll bet you a dollar that there's a lot of private contractors that are over there supporting the base or protecting somebody in a base that nobody even knew existed. It's insane how easy it is to promulgate people into conflict zones and not have to pony up and say, yeah, that was my decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could not agree with you more. Hey, and let's not, I don't want to get too deep into the military industrial complex, but many of these wars being fought, it's all about feeding the military industrial complex. In fact, there's theories out there that our last president helped escort him out the door because he wouldn't engage in pointless wars. You think there's some truth to that?
I mean, there's definitely truth to the military industrial complex is always going to march on. Here's what I think is really interesting is that we have turned durable goods into consumable goods, right? You used to make bullets and bombs and grenades and they yeah. sit around for years or even decades and you'd still use them. Now, those defense contractors can't make them fast enough because we're shipping them overseas to be used. They become consumable goods and they, you know, the orders just keep coming in. So there's definitely a profit, a reason why they keep making these and keep shipping them out is because there's a nice profit motive for them.
Right. Yeah. It's all about the money in the end. Hey, Morgan, you got a website you can direct us to? Tell us how to get your book, Guns, Girls, and Greed.
Hop on Amazon. It's available for hardcover. It's on Kindle. And then Jay Moore, the actor from Jerry Maguire, did the audio for it. Spectacular. I listened to it the other day. So any way you want to consume it, no pun intended, consumable goods, jump on there and grab it today. It's a wild ride. Don't let your kids read it. It's a ground perspective. It is the good and the bad of war. You know, you got the good stuff we did. You have like losing friends and it is
sad.
Yeah. And there's a lot of bad words in it because that's how we talked.
Mm-hmm. Could not agree with you more. Hey, appreciate you coming on. You got a question for Morgan, myself. Email is kl@kerrylutz.com. And the link to his book will be found in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. While you're there, please sign up for your free newsletter. Morgan, been a pleasure. Hey, good luck with the book, and I'm looking forward to the movie.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kerry. Just, you know, tell Michael Bay it's available.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.